Good morning, Ithaca and Watkins Glen. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this morning's edition of the Made of Clay Report is Mossad Abdelghany, if I pronounced it correctly.
That's correct.
Okay. So, Mossad, the way we start the show is to ask, who are you? And people can take that with labels or the quality of person, and everybody handles it slightly different, but it's how we start to get to know each other.
Okay. My name is Mossad Abdelghany. I'm originally from Egypt, and I came here to really take my education at Cornell, and then I work at Cornell almost 25 years. Have a family of three people, my wife and two daughters.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a Muslim, and I'm a very humble guy. This, I think, how I present myself.
Right. And that is the quality you aspire to.
Yes.
And do you want to say anything more about the education that you came for?
Yes.
Or your family? Because you have a large extended family.
Yes,
too.
Really, no, my education, I came here, I study, and then I work with a very famous guy at Cornell. His name is Ephraim Recker, and I was lucky to have this guy as my mentor, because I learned from him a lot, and he treated me very good.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when he passed away in, I think it's 1991, I was forced to stay to take over his lab, and then to really deal with, he had a sex lab with his student.
Uh-huh.
And his postdoc. And this why, you know, after that, I had to resign from my position in Alexandria University and stay in the United States.
You were honored to receive the mantle of your mentor.
That's correct, really.
Yeah,
he was an excellent guy, really.
And you had said that the humility, or the quality of being humble, is what you aspire to. The song that you brought to start the show with today is from Sami Youssef.
Yes.
And can you say the name in Arabic, and I'll translate it in English?
The name is the song is Sami Youssef, and his song Hasbi Rabbi Galla Allah,
which we believe translates best to English as I depend on God alone. And we're going to start the show with that this morning.
Allah, the Almighty,
Allahu Allah,
protect me and guide me,
Allahu Allah,
oh, to your love and mercy,
Allahu Allah,
ya Allah, don't deprive me,
Allahu Allah,
from beholding your beauty,
Allahu Allah,
oh, my Lord, accept this plea,
Allahu Allah.
Yüreklerin fenahı
Allahu Allah
İşit Allah derdimi bu ahlarını Rahmeyle bağışla günahlarını Hayreyle hem akşam hem sabahlarını
Hasbi Rabbi canallah Allahu Allah Ma fi kalbi gayrullah Allahu Allah
nishane hai
allahu allah
sab dilon ki jaan hai
allahu allah
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Mossad Abdelghany. So Mossad, and that piece of music was entitled I Depend on God Alone. And our music will be in Arabic this morning for this segment. Yes. Yeah. So Mossad, tell me, the purpose of the show is to get to know the kinds of experiences and that have helped to shape people's lives and how they have come to value what they value and to move away from what they've moved away from and what experience or experiences have been critical.
I think my experience as a scientist, you know, when I came here in a young age and then, you know, I stayed and then you really work for a long time with cancer research and then you are deeply involved with science. Maybe this sometimes when you work in science, according to our, you know, holy book, that the most people they fear God is the scientist, because they can see sometimes how the, you know, the creature did, you know, when you see a cell under the microscope.
Right. You see the works from a different point of view.
Yeah. And after that, you know, I've started really to, after learning all this stuff, and then I have a family. And you know, I have really to thank my wife because she took a good care of my children. So, and then she let me only, you know, to concentrate on my work.
Right. And were your children born here or
in
Egypt?
Yes.
Okay.
So what happened, after that, I start to be involved with the Muslim community. When I'm involved in the Muslim community here, you start to see some issues coming. And these issues, you know, somehow grab you to be involved in sometimes in to be in the middle of it or to be maybe on one side or the other side in order for you to keep the community intact.
Right.
So I was really in the advisory board for Mecca or Muslim students, I don't know, maybe 15 years or something. And since that, you know, really I start to be involved more and more and then to read more and more, not in science, but also in the religion part, which I did not read as much when I was in my country.
Right. This is, and this is this, and you're kind of winding your way back to, to science. I want to, one of the things that many people don't realize is that within my understanding, within Islam, if there is a conflict between science and religion, then one of them has been obviously misunderstood.
That's correct.
And the, and so that the idea is that they need to be in compatible.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. And reinforcing.
Yeah.
So when you began, what your love of your community, I'm hearing, propelled you back to study the Quran and other teachings,
to read
in the teachings.
Yeah.
How was it different to learn about Islam as probably, I'm guessing you were in your 30s when you were doing that, as opposed to a young man growing up in Egypt?
You know, when you have a lot of responsibility, either in work or with the family, so your way for looking and digesting new knowledge is completely different, because now you are more mature. And then you read the stuff by the way in which you really want to understand. Not just, you know, you're holding the Quran and then just to read for reading it. But if you want to give the message for other people in the community, so you expect that you read it, you understand it, you digest it, and then you be prepared sometimes for answer some questions.
Right.
Yeah.
And my sense of what I'm hearing is that you understand it is to see it both in its complexity and its simplicity.
That's correct.
I want to just take a footnote here
because this is where
it's part conversation and less interview. My experience has been most people who have abandoned a religious or secular practice of their youth abandoned something that they understood only in relatively immature or rationalistic or emotional ways rather than a more comprehensive way. So what I like to see is when people can go back and then reassess, and they may continue to reject or to adapt, but they come to it from a mature point of view, and we often don't foster that.
Yeah, that's correct. You know what also? I think what very important was for me is that when you have a children and then you want mm-hmm. to let them grow, you know, and then, you know, with Islam. So you have really to convince them what's the teaching.
Right.
And because you cannot just come, you know, in a different culture, and then you tell them you have to do 1, 2, 3.
You can't make them yes. become Muslim. Yeah. They have to choose
yeah,
it.
They have to choose.
And convincing is not coercing.
Yeah. And it has to be coming from inside them, you know. My children are, you know, they use a head cover.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And these things, it cannot be forced.
Right.
They have to choose it.
Right.
So in order for them to keep it and to teach it to the next generation, they have mm-hmm. first to be really, you know, understand it. They know why they do it. And then they are what they do, they like.
Right, yeah. Right, right. And they, so their life then becomes their offering.
Yes.
And not an extension of your ego.
It's not. It is because even, you know, if I'm sure that you saw my daughter, you know, she's mm-hmm. she is very involved in the community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And
the, and then, she was getting very involved about 10 years ago
yes.
when I first met you. And you were a father of such pride at that point. I remember yeah, yeah. when we first
and,
met.
And she is really, you know, even on the net or in the community, mm-hmm. you know, she's doing a lot of activity, which mm-hmm. I like. Like yesterday, we're just, you know, standing in the rally for, you know, black, you know, people
black
here.
And
the,
yeah. Yes.
So, and she was, I was standing with them and I was surprised that a lot of people really know her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and this really make me at least, you know that I did, my wife and mm-hmm. I did, I think, not a bad job to raise them.
Right, right. Now, let's go back to yeah. your reading in yeah. the Muslim texts. Yeah. And so how were, not, you read with different eyes, with more mature eyes, but what did you notice that was different than the first time around? And did you have much of a religious schooling when you were in Egypt, or did you grow up in a more secular household?
Really, no. When I grew up in Egypt in French school.
Oh, in French?
Yeah. Okay, and yeah, yeah. So I was...
So not English, but French.
No, French. Yeah, and until yeah. the medical school, yeah, yeah. it was just French, mm-hmm. complete French school. The only things we take in Arabic is the Arabic language.
Yeah, okay.
Everything else in French.
Right.
But, you know, and over there, because, you know, you have a lot of mosque around you, so don't really think about it except you go to pray one time, you go home, and that's it.
Right.
When I came here, I don't want to say I was forced, but I was involved to sometimes, you know, lead the prayer.
Right.
Especially Friday prayers, then you have to give a talk
yes.
or a khutbah. So now, in order for you to give the people, so you must have enough knowledge.
Right.
You have to know what really you are giving them. You have to know if it is correct or not.
Right.
And then also you have to be prepared mentally and physically when you start to let the people, you know, give attention to you when you talk with, and then they can learn really new knowledge, can help them in the future with their children too. Does this answer the question?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yes. Because you... Because of your role and your love for the people,
yes.
You had to step up your game, and it had to be honest.
That's correct.
Because you can't fake it and take that role and last for any length
yeah,
of time.
I can.
Yeah, yeah. I was introduced to the Muslim community in Tompkins County when I was an undergrad, and I had a Turkish roommate my second semester freshman year, but he was secular and anti-religious, but he had friends from yeah. Turkey and from Malaysia and from Indonesia,
yeah.
and I kind of got introduced, and there was a small group then, and there were not the kinds of animosities that came later,
yeah.
What were the tensions in the community that compelled you to step forward, or and others, because you're part of a small group of Muslims kind of based in the vet school, right?
Yes.
That have had an influence on this.
You know, first of all, when I came here originally in the 80s, and then I find that even it was sometimes there is two groups.
Yes, yes,
and,
absolutely.
And this was really disturbing me.
Why? Yeah.
Because usually, you know, we are, as a Muslim, we're supposed to be united, mm-hmm. especially if you're in a place in which we are not big number.
Right.
And then if you are divided, it will not really work out.
Right. And united in Islam means something, I think, a little more visceral and different than united means in Christianity.
Yes.
Because in united in Islam, you are expected to be united across race and across national boundaries.
Yes. Everything that we have... Not only that, but we don't have a place for worshiping here.
Well, that's, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we pray at Cornell, Annabelle Teller Hall. So now if you want to build a place for worship, you need a big number.
Right.
You know, for donation. But when you find that your number is small and then it's divided, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
So now to bring the people back together, it was a very hard, really, task.
Yes.
It was very hard for me. And you find everyone, when you hear him, what he's telling you is 100% correct. But
right.
when you hear from the other side, it's different.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And I just, let me give a little bit of background, and
yes.
you can feel free to correct anything that I say.
No, no.
But my understanding is that in the Muslim community in Tompkins County, people hail from 60 to 70 different countries.
Yes.
And the community of people who are actively observant are somewhere between 250 and 350.
Yes.
But there are another 300 to 600 people
which,
who identify, but it's more cultural and less devotional.
Yes.
And those numbers might be big enough to support a mosque or a
yes.
chaplaincy, but they're divided. And in this world, we live in a world where people expect to get communities that fit who they think they are.
Yes, and that's
and,
a problem.
And
yeah.
the tension between diversity and
yes.
unity
yes.
is a universal problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the only thing that we tried and try hard to bring everybody together, and then, you know, sometimes you have to be a mediator.
Yes.
In which, you know, can bring everything to the middle in order for people. And I think really we were successful. Now we are almost, sometimes, of course, there is problem, you know, came
sure.
surface.
Yeah.
But we were very successful that to did that. And I think now we're doing good so far.
Right.
We
have, right.
Yeah.
And you have grown, the community has grown enough
yes.
that you can have multiple groups. You have Mecca, which is predominantly undergraduate,
yes, yes.
and the Islamic Alliance for Justice,
yes.
and the Committee for the Advancement of Muslim Living, and other groups.
Yes.
And then there's a
yeah.
group that's formed at Ithaca College.
Yeah,
as
and
well.
There is one here also, you know, where it is in 103. It is ICOC.
Yes, yes.
Which, you know, which is really, you know, a building which we pay rent for as a Sunday school.
Is that an
school.
Apartment? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And there are prayers. And I had lunch with a man who
yeah.
prays there regularly.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
a small
yeah.
number
yeah.
of
yeah.
people.
Small
who
number,
pray.
But, you know, it's at least it's doing good.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now, and also, you know, we have now El Huda Islamic Center, which is the name of the, you know, mosque or the center which you want to build.
Want
you already
to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bought a land in Graham Road. Close
mm-hmm.
to the mall, and now we have to collect, you know, all what we need for building.
Right,
yeah.
right. And I think that there is support in this community in a way that there outside of the Muslim community that you might have more resistance elsewhere. And I think, and I pray that that can continue to happen.
Really, yeah. you know, this is the best community I saw. I had a lot of offer when I was working here to go to other places. I refused it completely.
And why? Because there are other places are bigger urban areas with
yeah.
larger Muslim populations.
But here, Ithaca is a nice place. It's really, what I said, is a very nice family place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see even, you know, 2001, mm-hmm. I had my neighbor. He walked to my house and told me something which I was almost close to cry. He told me, we are lucky to have you as a neighbor.
Uh-huh.
And this was in the middle of a big disaster.
Uh-huh.
And this really somehow, really, I hugged the guy and I thanked him, but this showing me how really Ithaca work.
Yep.
Support
yep.
and support yep. and support.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. That's very powerful. Mm. Let's cut to music. What should we play next?
You can play maybe Maher Zain, Mawlaya, the second one.
Yes. Mm. And I believe it's translated as Thank You, Allah.
Yeah, Allah. Yes.
Yes. Here we go.
أنت نور الله فجرا جئت بعد العسر يسرا ربنا أعلاك قدرا يا إمام الأنبياء أنت في الوجدان حي أنت للعينين ضي أنت عند الحوض ري أنت هاد وصفي يا حبيبي يا محمد يا نبي سلام عليك يا رسول سلام عليك يا حبيب سلام عليك صلوات الله عليك يا نبي سلام عليك يا رسول سلام عليك يا حبيب سلام عليك صلوات الله عليك خير رسل ربي من به أبصرت دربي يا شفيع يا رسول الله أيها المختار فينا زادنا الحب حنينا جئتنا بالخير دينا يا ختام المرسلين يا سلام عليك يا رسول سلام عليك يا حبيب سلام عليك صلوات الله عليك يا نبي سلام عليك يا رسول سلام عليك يا حبيب سلام عليك صلوات
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Mossad Abdelghany. Mossad, you know, it takes a lot to leave one's homeland, especially as an adult, and to not go back. What about your work here compelled you to stay?
Yeah. It's really, you know, my work when I came here, I work in a very, you know, important subject, which was about mechanism of carcinogenicity. So we're studying this issue, and then I continue all my years.
And so that's what makes something carcinogenic?
Which we really, you know, there is a lot of stuff which
right.
you think is not.
Yes,
but
yeah.
It can.
Right.
It all depends on the biology of, you know, of your body.
Mm-hmm,
it,
mm-hmm.
Something can be carcinogenic for me, but not for you.
Right.
So somehow, you know, there is a change in some of the cell of the body in which can be transformed to be a cancer cell.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I work in this until now I have about 50 publications in a very good journal, you know, and all about breast cancer and lung cancer. And so it was, I think it was a very successful life. And I'm workaholic, you know. I go to the lab very early. I leave late. And lately, just, you know, I start to involve really in a lot of volunteer work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I go to some... I go to Moravia. There is a correction facility there
right.
to meet the Muslim inmate, to talk to them from mm-hmm. time to time. I did some work at Red Cross here,
uh-huh.
you know, as a volunteer. I volunteer. Sometimes I go to Catholic charities
right.
in Cortland and in Syracuse. And, you know, I like to be involved in some stuff to show mm-hmm. that the other side of me,
right.
which is not only as a scientist, but as a human being,
uh-huh.
which I think this, you know, we did a lot of talk together, if you remember, and I was happy. So the people see always that the community is not, you know, different people or different range, but the community,
yes.
when they came together, is only one person, and usually we talk the same language.
Yeah.
So this is what, you know, I left really Egypt and they stay here.
Yeah.
I just want to add something. My research here, let me take two awards from Egypt, one from the University of Alexandria and one which was the national, you know, award of Egypt for biology.
Wow.
So I was really recognized by...
So you were affirmed by the country that you left.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I mean, and that's sweet. That's
It was very nice, I think. And I went really to my university every 4 years. They sent me a ticket to give lecture over there about my research here. It was, I think it was a very good time.
And one of the things that I don't know is if it's widely understood, but much of the research that goes on in the vet school has to do with the effects of issues with human bodies, and they may be using other animals or issues to study them.
Yeah.
But so breast cancer has been a huge piece of research there for a long time. How do you, when you look at your contribution to science, how would you describe that?
Oh, okay.
And I'm asking this question as kind of a lead up.
It's very good.
As also because you've made a contribution also to Islam and to community here. But how is your contribution?
You know, again, what I'm saying, all my contribution in my religion or my science looks like a drop of water in the middle of an ocean.
Absolutely, as they do for all of us. Yeah.
So what I'm saying it is, I did really some addition, but this addition did not give you the final equation.
Right.
So what we do a lot of addition, like, you know, people before us, and then the people after us, maybe one of them will come and then solve the whole equation. But so far, we discovered some proteins in lung, which really can, we said that these play a role for cancer cells to grow. But this was not really used in human, because we cannot. We used it in animal, in that stuff.
Yes.
It's still a long way to go.
Right. And that's the nature of basic research, you're doing very precise empirical work and then projecting and guessing.
And really, you know, we leave it as the first step for other people to go through this first step to reach the second step, third step.
And And you've been here long enough that you have also watched the growth, substantial growth of a Muslim community, and your contribution there has been one to kind of be a mediator, as you had said before, but also now that that's not an avocation for you. You are doing it more in your retirement work.
Yes,
and in your going to prisons and going to other environments and representing not only your faith but also meeting people who need to make connections.
Yes. I think this is very important because, again, what I'm saying, the people here take, most of the people, take their information about Islam from the media.
Right. And people here being the U.S.
Yes. I'm, of course, I talk about the U.S., not Ithaca. And in order for them to recognize the reality of a religion, they have to know it from somebody really which do the religion, which touch it. And when you talk about your religion with people which they heard completely opposite stuff from the media, they are surprised.
And I want to just embellish that comment ever so slightly. When I would do interfaith conversations, I would pointedly not ask religious leaders.
Yeah.
Because they oftentimes don't speak about their religion in the same way that practitioners do. And practitioners need to listen to each other.
That's correct.
To understand how they're struggling, to understand, to balance, to take joy, to suffer, you know, all of this stuff.
You know, really, I was giving a talk, maybe it was, I think, 23rd December in a group from Catholic Charity. And they were surprised that I told them we are the only religion recognize Jesus. Muslim, he cannot be a Muslim without, you know, believing Jesus.
Right. But not as a Christian would believe in Jesus.
At least you say there is Jesus, right?
Right.
So they were surprised because they told me we never really thought that Muslim recognize Jesus. We just thought that you guys say is only Muhammad, and this is the religion of Muhammad. We told them, no, in order for you to be a Muslim, you have really to recognize and to believe in from Adam until Muhammad. Without that, you are not a Muslim.
I just want to tread into what would be potentially The Baha'is recognize Jesus as well, but they have a tenuous a stance. But you can still interact and respect for a relationship with Baha'is, except where it's become more fundamentalist in nature.
You know, like, you know, there is like Shi, you know.
Yes, like the Shia Sunni.
Yeah, Shia and Sunni, you know, stuff. Because, you know, there is, we don't want really the people to go to deviate from the main core of the religion and then go far left or far right just to make something which is completely different, because this will dilute what the religion about. Yeah. Which really you find a lot of people, like, you know, maybe Baha'i, like Shi'i, what they do, it is far from what really Prophet Muhammad teaches.
Right. What I want to let me just make a station ID, since we're at the half hour point. Yeah. You're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen, and our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Mossad Abdul Ghani. So in Ithaca, I'm going to ask this in a very careful way, because it is very hard when you are a member of a minority. I come out of a Christian tradition, which gave rise to Christian anarchism in the middle part of the 19th century and the rural agrarian revolt against banks and railroads and stuff. You know, and we are such a tiny minority and don't practice Christianity in quite the same way that some of the other groups do. So when we talk about conflict, it's just all around us and we kind of accept it. But when you're a tiny minority, you don't talk very, it's hard to talk about some of the conflicts within your group because it feels like it may make people vulnerable.
Yes.
And yet for us to understand the diversity of opinion within the Muslim community here, what is that diversity, and what are the roots of the diversity? Is it Shia Sunni? Is it economic class? Is it regional countries people are from? What is the nature of the diversity?
I think here is the main one, maybe because, and I don't know really how big it is, the Shia group in Ithaca,
right,
but no. I know that it was some, but because there is.
You're Sunni.
I'm Sunni.
Sunni.
Yeah.
And one of the former leaders of the community back in the 90s was on the vet school faculty.
Yes.
He was a Shia.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So now here's the question. You know, when you go and then you read the teaching of Prophet Muhammad, maybe peace be upon him, and then you find that some people, I'm not really attacking them, but I'm saying, you know, sometimes the teaching of stuff, even some in some places Sunni, sometimes they deviate from the right path.
Uh-huh.
They go very hard, you know, or they
go
very
extreme.
Light.
Or soft.
Very soft. So the most important, I'm saying for anyone, if you want to really do the religion and use it by the correct way in order for you to reach paradise in the hereafter, read. Uh-huh. Not depend on listening, even to a Muslim.
Right.
Because when you go and then read and then see what heart telling you.
Go to original sources and react yourself.
And what your heart tell you, this is what you follow. This is what Prophet Muhammad said.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're integrating your mind and your heart and your
heart,
physical reactions.
Yes. And then your information. You have now a lot. You don't have an excuse.
Right.
Because if you go to the net, you find everything is there.
Right.
You don't have even to buy books.
Right. But you also, this is the same point that you were making about your daughters. You make your own decision, and it's the one you have to live with.
Yeah.
I think we're bumping up against a point that is really important. And within a community that is honest, people are seeking things that may come with conflict.
Yes.
But the conflicts are not bad. They can be very productive if they push people to go deeper.
That's correct.
And so what may be more useful, and this is something that I've been trying to understand, what may be useful is to rather say that you're on this extreme or that extreme, is to say this is where you stand with the truth now, and it puts you in a certain conflict or tension with others. How can we make that tension meaningful rather than damning?
This is what I just told you. Now, don't listen to me. I mean, I'm telling you, even when I I give, you know, this.
So I'm just flipping back.
No, I got it.
In other words, I got it.
You know, when I tell them, listen, I'm giving you this, you know, khutbah or talk on Fridays.
Sure.
Please go and read if I told you makes sense or not. Build your own opinion. Okay.
Right.
If I say something which you are not really understand it, right, or you are not really believe it,
right,
read, come back, and then tell me this is a conflict.
Right.
So we can really solve it together.
Right. Right. And or understand how it's an important, yes, conflict that will endure.
Which is really, you know, sometimes conflict can build a lot of trust and truth.
Muscles work, yes, because they oppose, yes, each other.
Yeah.
So conflict, yeah, is, yes, at the core, yeah, of, yeah, nature. Yeah.
So this is what I'm saying. I'm always, you know, telling the people when I talk, especially, you know, in my Friday sometimes, I tell them, I don't want you to listen to anyone giving the ceremony.
Yeah.
After he done, please go and read what he told you and come back, discuss it with him if there is any conflict.
Right. So one of the things, and this is, there are cultural issues, yes, there are human life development issues. I grew up in a part of the country that was pretty well split between people who were they wouldn't question Christianity, but they weren't religious, you know, and they were pretty, you know,
yes,
and then there were the Christians of various stripes, but within certain communities, it's not perceived as either polite or appropriate to question or to argue. And I've seen it among Christians. I've seen it among Jews. I've seen it among Muslims.
Yes.
And sometimes the message that you just said isn't getting out there. And sometimes I see its roots are people coming from traditional cultures where you have to you speak up in very subtle ways, which an outsider will not get. And the other one is with youth who, yeah, are teenagers who don't speak up because they don't have the age. Yes.
So this way, you know, when I was really in charge of distributing the Friday ceremony, I asked everyone in the Muslim community to stand and give the ceremony on Friday.
Uh-huh.
And I told them, I'm willing to help you in preparing. I will give you the books, everything. Why? Because I want them to just, you know, gain trust.
Mm-hmm.
They can talk, because talking is a very good, really, step for us to communicate.
Right.
But not only come and then sit, and then maybe half time, you are not listening.
Right, yeah, right. But that suggestion requires that people have a belief that you are making the community together, that you each have a responsibility for taking a risk to learn, and you may be a little bit off, but it's you're willing to listen to people who may not have it, you know, who may have, yeah, and what I wonder is sometimes I've noticed in Christian communities, for example, or even in Jewish communities, they want somebody to be an expert who will give the expert piece, and that allows the community to be passive.
Yeah. You know, really, what I'm telling the people, I'm not really a scholar.
No.
I'm just,
but
yeah,
and you're honest, yeah, but you're also not ashamed of,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, and I tell them, listen, when I come here to talk to you guys, I have to be prepared. I read,
right,
I prepare. So please, you know, if you have any problem, even you can, mm-hmm, come and, mm-hmm, contact me. They have my phone number. They have my, yeah.
And do you still work with the group on the Friday,
yes,
services?
I still do
sermons.
That. I still do that. And I think maybe I'm, you know, sitting on the side, you know, track,
sure,
but still, you know, my eyes open, and looks like, you know, a watching dog.
Yeah.
Which, but I help a lot.
Right, and I understand. For a community as diverse as those undergraduate and graduate students are from, like we said, 60 to 70, yeah, countries around, yeah, the world, there are lots of conflicting expectations going after the service, yeah, going at the services and the sermons. And it's a beautiful opportunity, and it's a very awkward moment.
You see, Eric, let me tell you something.
Sure.
I think when you came to the point in which you feel that the community respect you,
mm-hmm,
so they can listen to you.
Yeah.
Why? Because they know that you are always moderate. You are taking always, you know, the middle, you know, path. And in the same time, in most of the stuff,
yeah,
you are trying to bring people to good stuff,
yeah,
even, you know, together.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this way, maybe, I'm just saying, maybe.
I'm gonna say what you said in just a slightly different way.
Sure.
But I want to honor, we have an absolute imperative to represent moderate Islam,
yes,
in this culture, because, yeah, people don't see it. But to be the kind of respected leader that, yeah, you've described, you have to be unashamed to stand with anybody anywhere.
That's correct. Yes.
So that you're never physically in the middle. You are oftentimes all over the edges because you're not ashamed of people. You're willing to engage them where they are. Yeah. And that, we need
but,
that.
Yes, but yes. Not only that, but even when you stand with one, uh-huh. you also must have, you know, enough evidence.
Yeah.
And you bring the other, tell them, yeah. this is the evidence, so we have to stand with this guy. Yeah. So this why maybe it is, of course, by the will of God, I think I get a lot of respect of this community. They yeah. respect me a lot. And I like that. And I love them all, alhamdulillah.
Yeah, and it is possible to love people who don't know how to love each other.
Yes, because...
And that's maturity.
Yes, when you love them, maybe you'll teach them how to love each other.
Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe. We can't... We're not in control of that, but we can offer
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Masad, let's go to the next piece of music. So we go to the Yusuf
yes.
Islam.
Yes.
And... You had a the moon is appearing in the form of the prophet.
Of
is
the prophet,
way,
yes.
The
that's
way
very
we translate
close, yes,
that.
Correct.
Listening to the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Mossad Abdelghany. Mossad, what have you learned in the course of your development as a religious? I want to say a religious leader, but you're not trained.
No.
But that's part of why you have a position that requires humility. But also as a scientist, and as a father, and as a husband, what have you learned that has forced you to change something you may have held early in life that you've learned was good to let go of?
You know what, really, you know, when you come from your country, which you have brothers, sisters, you know, relative everywhere, and then you came to a country in which you find yourself with your wife and that you have two children. So the best things which you learn, which is really the family love. So how really, you know, you have to be with your family and how to take care of each other, especially if we are four people and we just, you know, came here, you know.
So you didn't anticipate having to tend to that family so much.
Yes.
And what did you have to do that you didn't think you'd have to do?
I think really, you know, the way it's really hard to explain, but when you find yourself alone and then you find the only people which when you go home to find them is your family. So now this really changed a lot. This now will teach you, you know, how family is important.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, from now we start to expand outside.
Mm-hmm.
You start really to see a good friend which really can somehow click with you.
Right.
So, and then, you know, so you start to grow up little bit by little bit. And then, you know, until we came to the big family, which is a Muslim family plus, you know, I say that we have a lot of Christian really friends.
Yes.
In which, you know, really we came to the point in which we felt that I feel now, I don't know if somebody will believe it, I feel I was born in Ithaca.
Uh-huh.
Really, it's a strange feeling, but
you belong here.
Yeah, you know, for all this time, I sometimes forget completely I was born in Egypt or in Alexandria, because, you know, it's almost what, about 30 years here or 25 years?
It's more than 30 years here.
Yeah.
It's if you came in 83, yeah, so yeah. It's 33 almost.
Yeah. So yeah. Now it will be really, you know, long time in which this changed my idea about, you know, family, about friend, about, you know, how to be nice to everyone, to make your mm-hmm. small family to be a big family.
Right. And I hadn't anticipated this, but this is a logical segue.
Yeah.
You have participated in the conversations around Ithaca welcomes refugees.
Yes.
And a huge part of that problem is becoming friends and in effect family for people who are coming either alone or with just a very small family and helping with that transition. You just explained.
Yes. You see, now, as when I came here as a small family, so I felt sometimes I'm lonely.
Right.
What I have to go. I go to work, come back to my family. So now maybe this put me in a position in which I think about people coming as refugee.
Yes.
And this really, even I came and they have a job, I have a house, you know, everything.
You came with lots of things.
Yeah, with a lot of stuff. Now those people coming here with nothing.
Right.
So now when I put myself in their position, so I feel that really my really stuff is to how to help those people.
Right.
When they come here to support them, to help them as much as I can, even if I can help them before even coming to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, really, every time I go to Cornell, especially on Friday, I announce that there is, you know, our meeting,
right,
and so on, so on, the time and everything.
Right. And I'm going to make that plug right now, and we'll do it again later. There is a meeting this afternoon at 1:30 for a group of it's a second organizational meeting of Ithaca Welcomes Refugees.
Yes.
And it was inspired by the Syrian refugee crisis and the just the enormous tragedy of all of that, but also by the realization that we have more refugees wandering around the globe now than at any other time since shortly after World War II. And the group is meeting at Dodds Hall, which is in the First Presbyterian Church, at 1:30. The First Presbyterian Church is at the corner of Cayuga and Court Streets in Ithaca. So we welcome you to join us as we begin to organize a community response to welcome refugees, not just from the Middle East, but from around
from
the world, as we have done with many South Asians and people from Eastern Europe and Southeast Asia. Okay, Mossad,
Yes.
Let's. The question that I normally end the show with is, what do you do on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis to restore yourself physically, emotionally, mentally, intellectually? What do you do?
You know, really, my day is very, you know, very well organized. What I do, I wake up in the morning. If I have to go to some place for volunteer, or I go, you know, to work or anything. And then after that, after I come back, I have to go for a walk for at least 2 miles. I have to read every night. I have to listen to the news, especially about Egypt.
Uh-huh.
To excuse me, to find out what is going on, especially, you know, those days we have a lot of disturbance.
Yes.
And so this why maybe this one of the stuff which I don't want to go even to visit.
Right.
Because I'm sure that if I go there, maybe they'll take me from the airport to jail. So because I'm very open guy, I write against the regime now. And the whole, I know that they don't like everyone writing, you know,
right,
against them. But usually I have to do exercise daily.
Right.
I have to walk daily. I have to read. And I have, of course, sometimes, you know, to wash all the dishes for my wife.
Uh-huh. Yes, and for yourself. But yes, no, I get it. And the prayers.
And the prayers, of course.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
We have to pray 5 times a day. And, you know, prayer is a very important part of our life. We have to do it because this is the most big sin. If you don't do it, it's not good.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Prayer is taking also, that's correct, taking part of our life. But, you know, like what we said, usually, you know, God give you this body to keep it in good shape.
Right.
So this is why we are trying to give it in good shape. And, you know, because if you have it in good shape, then you do your prayer also good.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I want to get more closely doing the dishes for your wife. Within Christian tradition, there is a theology of washing dishes, and it was the Catholic brother who took it upon himself as his devotional act was to wash the dishes for the monastery or for the group, and there is a simplicity that comes from that, and it creates an emotional simplicity.
Yeah, you know, really, what I want to say, all the people all around the world, they think that. Women in Islam or Muslim women is oppressed.
In some places they are.
Yeah. I don't see that because most of them, I think the men in Islam, they are oppressed.
Well, there's that too. I mean, I've been down that path. Yeah.
So what I'm saying, you know, really, you know, helping, you know, our prophet, maybe peace upon him, he was helping his wife doing, you know, the stuff at home.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, fixing his shoes. He was cooking if they want. He's, you know, do a lot of stuff. So at least, you know, if I can do that, you know, my wife do a lot of stuff. So for me to maybe vacuum the floor or arrange my bed or do the dishes, I don't think this is something be that.
Routine life.
Yes, which is, I think it's also part of the exercise, daily exercise, you know, to do the chores. It's very good, really. You don't feel it.
Right.
And this burn a lot of calories.
Right. And chores are different than exercise in one important way. Our chores involve the things that we deeply care about that impact other people.
Yes,
that's often. And our exercise is what we do for ourselves, our own bodies. Although our physical health does impact our partners.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that, you know, maybe when you tell some people, you know, sometimes, you know, when I go to Catholic Church and I tell the people that, you know, you do your chores like you do exercise, so just do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So now they learn that, you know, I'm saying that when you do your chores, not only to please somebody, but in the same time, you give your body, you know, a good really way to exercise.
Yes, yes, yes, yes. I was trying to how do you cultivate the emotional maturity? I hear you. You're reading, you're studying, you're reflecting, and is there an intentional thing you do to keep your emotional life flexible?
Yes, I think the most things which really adjust this is our prayer, and you know when you are sometimes upset, you have bad emotion, or you think about something, you know, which is not happy. If you read, like, you know, now when I'm really, you know, getting frustrated,
yeah,
maybe I start to read as I prepare, you know, one of this, you know, talk for Juma, you know, for this prayer
right.
on Friday.
Right.
because I feel really, you know, I'm helping myself to relax. In the same time, I'm preparing myself to give good knowledge for other people to use to relax to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So absolutely. That's the whole idea.
Right. Let me just think here for one more second. What has been the impact on your marriage of having lived here as opposed to Egypt? What has been, in a certain sense, your gift to your wife and her gift to you that you can have here that you may or may not have had there?
Yes, I think the most really good impact in our life that is only me and my wife. There is no relative left or right.
Of your so age our, group yeah, or yeah, your
yeah,
no
yeah,
parents.
I mean, yeah. No parents, right. No relative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now we came to the point in which both of us only have each other and our children.
Yeah.
So we were forced really, you know, to solve any things, you know, appear or came and to try to solve it, to make our life, you know, successful.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm going to make another pitch for the meeting this afternoon. Sure. There will be a meeting of Ithaca Welcomes Refugees at First Presbyterian Church at the corner of Cayuga and Court Streets in the Dodd's room. That'll be at 1:30, and it's our second organizing meeting, so we're still coming together,
yes.
But it's a way to welcome people who have been driven from their homelands to the U.S. Mossad, it has been really good to get to know you here.
Thank you. I'm happy, you know, to have me, and I wish, you know, we always, you know, meet, and then we do our activity, which you did it. How many years ago?
We met talking about the relationship of science and religion, science and the practice of faith.
And
my contention then was that the practice of science, which is one of exploration,
yes,
is no different than the practice of faith, which was a very contentious claim at the time, but has become less so in the last 10 years.
That's correct.
It's really good to get to know you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we're going to close with the song
Mawlay.
Yes, by Marzain.
Yes.
And its name in English is My Master.
Yes.
Do you want to say anything about this song in your life?
Really, this song, really, when I hear it, I feel sometimes that, you know, tears coming out of my eyes, because maybe sometimes this takes me back to my country and I remember maybe all my relatives.
Thank you.
And of course, my beloved prophet.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
طلعتي وجه جميل والشمس كبسمته ظل ظليل هو عبد الله سيد الخلق ومصطفى وحبيب الله خير مبعوث من وحي الله مولاي صايا
نسألك الله أن تجمعنا يوما برسول الله من كوثره يروينا فتقبل يا رب مولاي صلي وسلم دائما أبدا على حبيبك خير الخلق كلهم مولاي صلي وسلم دائما أبدا على حبيبك خير الخلق كلهم يا رب صلي عليه يا رب صلي قلبي نقي ذاكر لله المصطفى الصفي صلى عليه الله أخلاقه وصفاته سبحان من سواه هو قدوتي وحبيبي ودعوة النجاة يا رسول الله يا حبيب الله